This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Virginia state lawmakers went into special session on Monday, ostensibly to deal with a stalemate over a new funding plan for state government. Those lawmakers, all back home now. No progress at all on the budget debate. So what's up with that? Virginia political reporter Julian Walker here to help us figure things out. Political scientist Bob Roberts, too. And Governor Terry McAuliffe is even scheduled to spend some time with us. Actually, with that kind of lineup, anything political is fair game. So whether you've got thoughts on the budget conundrum, the new poll showing disfavor for the General Assembly, the Pope's words on income inequality, or even the flare-up over President Obama's blue jeans, we're hoping you'll feel free to join the conversation right after the news. Great to be with you. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. Politics, our focus this hour. And if you've got thoughts about it, 888-WMRA-TALK is the easy way to remember our phone number. In a few minutes, we expect to connect with Virginia's governor, Terry McAuliffe, and a bit later with the minority leader in the House of Delegates, David Toscano. Both, of course, are Democrats, so I should mention that some Republican legislators were invited to join in today, too, but they were unable to make it. Then again, we did have two Republicans on for the full hour just a few days ago, so maybe somebody thought we'd reached our quota for the week. In any event, if you at any time find you'd like to join the conversation, you can either post to us on Facebook, where we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight, or give us a call at 888-967-2825. Already on the phone line with us, from the Virginian Pilot newspaper, political reporter Julian Walker. Thank you so much for making time for us.
Thanks for having me.
Plus, here with me in the Insight studio, James Madison University political scientist Bob Roberts. Thank you, Bob.
Glad to be here.
Julian, you first, if I could. There's a new poll out measuring Virginia's level of satisfaction with our governor and with the members of the state legislative body, the General Assembly. How'd those folks do?
Well, the legislature not so good. McAuliffe, the governor, it's more of a mixed bag. As far as views on Governor Terry McAuliffe in the early going, he gets a passing grade, if you will. Virginians are optimistic, 56%, about the next 4 years under Governor Terry McAuliffe. As far as their overall job approval rating for him, the numbers are a little bit lower, in about the 44 range, but he is still above water, as they say in political parlance, meaning that his approval numbers are higher than his negative numbers. As far as the legislature goes, they have an upside-down rating, but that is not uncommon, and as has been pointed out, their numbers are still much better and enviable from the perspective of Congress, which barely is in double digits in terms of approval rating. So kind of a mixed bag, and this poll, as you know, falls right in the middle of this protracted budget standoff where Medicaid expansion or proposed Medicaid expansion is at issue and hangs in the balance.
Bob Roberts, anything worth noting in these approval-disapproval ratings from Quinnipiac?
I think there was also some poll information that the Virginians really are somewhat ambivalent about this Medicaid debate. And that may be because they're very confused about it. Because on the one hand, the Republicans are stressing that, or alleging that Medicaid expansion could bankrupt the state. On the other hand, the governor and his Medicaid supporters, hospitals, are saying this money is essential to keep the hospitals operating efficiently. And I think both sides are having trouble, in a sense, convincing the majority of voters of which side is correct. And that's why I think part of the stalemate is the result of the fact that voters are ambivalent. They just don't understand or recognize what's really going on here. It's such a complex issue, they just don't understand it.
Julian, I think in your article about the Quinnipiac poll, you chose to focus some significant attention on the kind of state of optimism that Virginians seem to hold about the future. Tell us a little bit more about that.
As you pointed out, more than half of Virginians, 57%, say they're optimistic about the next 4 years. Again, the governor's overall approval rating is 44%, but Virginia voters feel generally positive about the way things are heading. They are more concerned with jobs in the economy, which is pretty standard and you would expect in a poll result. And as Dr. Roberts just pointed out, Medicaid and health care are much lower down on the list of priorities as respondents to the poll laid out for them. Health care overall got about 9%. Medicaid as an individual standalone issue got just 4% in terms of the ranking of priority. But again, back to your original question, most Virginians, 57% according to this Quinnipiac poll, say that they're at least optimistic about the run under Governor McAuliffe, even if they aren't as high on him as an individual.
And 57%, if I recall the numbers correctly, say that they think Virginia's economy is either in excellent or good shape. I would imagine, Bob Roberts, that you wouldn't have voted with that 57% based on what I've heard from you before.
No, I it's interesting because unemployment is down in Virginia. The federal budget standoff was settled, which helped to deal with Northern Virginia's angst about employment up there. But overall, if you look at the numbers of the state's budget, you actually look at how the state is doing financially, it's not doing that great. In other words, the budget numbers are all right, but they're nothing to brag about. So it's interesting that the citizens are feeling so optimistic when the state's financial situation is, let's say, it's not particularly rosy in terms of revenue and those types of issues, which are motivating the Medicaid debate. Because what the governor is arguing is we need that federal money because we could use that federal money to pay for other things. And therefore, there seems to be
both the money itself and the jobs
that it's going to create. So
Julian Walker, let's get to this special session that apparently wasn't. Well, technically it was. Tell us what happened this week when the General Assembly went into special session ostensibly to deal with the state budget and the controversy over what to do about Medicaid expansion.
Well, they did a lot of what happens when a vehicle is stuck in the mud. They spun their wheels. You had the Virginia Senate come in for a day in a start-and-stop session on Monday. They departed without taking any real action except for plotting future dates to reconvene. The House of Delegates, meanwhile, came in, spent 2 days here, Monday and Tuesday. They rejected the budget proposal by Governor Terry McAuliffe, which includes Medicaid expansion language and essentially outright Medicaid expansion. The plan that had been proposed in the Senate, which the governor had endorsed, was what is called the Marketplace Virginia option, which is an alternative on Medicaid expansion that's more of a private option model, although the net effect is largely the same as
in essence
Medicaid
what it
expansion.
Means is that instead of getting a Medicaid card, people who would qualify under the expanded criteria would get significant subsidies to buy their own private
health insurance. It would be like a health benefits exchange, which already exists in the state. You would just be going through a private marketplace as opposed to being just added outright to the state's Medicaid rolls, which now numbers about 1 million people. But the net effect would be largely the same, although procedurally it would run a little bit differently. But again, the House of Delegates rejected that proposal, the governor's proposal, which is more of an outright Medicaid expansion. They adopted their own budget, which does not include a Medicaid expansion proposal. And then they went home on Tuesday evening. Before they did that, they had a little bit of what amounts to legislative or General Assembly hijinks around here. They walked over to the vacant Senate chamber on Tuesday night after they had concluded action on their budget bill and left what I jokingly called the legislative version of a kick me sign on the outside of the Senate chamber door. They taped up a sign that said gone home and left a copy of their budget bill outside.
Right, outside the door.
And the Senate says that it's going to come back on the 7th of April to try again. Is that right?
Right. They're coming back. They're going to have a hearing next week on their budget bill, which most likely they will append their version of the budget, which has the private market Medicaid alternative. They will append that onto the McAuliffe plan, and that is what they will pass out. And then they will come back on the following week, April the 7th, and go through the kind of procedural steps that they have to in order to advance their version of the budget.
Well, joining us now by phone is the governor of Virginia, Terry McAuliffe. Governor, great to be speaking with you again, sir.
Well, it is great to be back with you. Thank you for giving me this opportunity.
Well, how long is it going to be before we have a new state budget?
I think you have to ask the House and the Senate. I proposed a budget the other day. I sent over a two-year pilot program that would cover up to 400,000 Virginians and net about $225 million in savings, bring our taxpayer dollars back. The House, unfortunately, didn't even read my 104 amendments. It is now over in the Senate. I've been having conversations with the Senate leadership. I spoke to Senator Stas 2 days ago and Senator Watkins. But it's now up to the House and Senate to come together. My bill, I'm flexible of what they may want to add to it. But listen, I've proposed a plan that's got 2% pay raises for all state employees, K-12 teachers, support personnel. I got $17 million in there for Line of Duty Act, $9 million for mental health. I got a very balanced budget that would last for 2 years, and I got out of Washington a letter that said no obligations to Virginia if we decide to get out of it, just to try it. So I've been here, but it's now up to the House and the Senate to get together and get this thing worked out.
Governor of Virginia is only going to be with us for a little less than 10 more minutes. So if you listening have a specific question for him or a suggestion perhaps that you'd like to share with him, get to the phone right now and dial in at 888-WMRA-TALK. That's 888-967-2825. Governor, as I think you know, Julian Walker from the Virginian Pilot newspaper and Bob Roberts from the Political Science Department at JMU are both here with us. So, Julian, let's ask you to ask the governor a question.
Well, I see the governor quite often, but the curiosity I have, and we've discussed this before, is just whether or not, and this is a question a lot of people have, is whether or not the governor thinks if there is no deal, whether or not the governor thinks that he has the authority to unilaterally go ahead with Medicaid expansion. And that's been something that's been discussed quite frequently among legislators, among the citizenry, et cetera. If the legislature can't agree to something, does Governor McAuliffe think that he can do it on his own?
Well, listen, what I have said is I want to do this through the legislative process. I believe that we can come together. As I say, I've been meeting and talking to the Republicans and the Democrats in the Senate for a long time now, and several conversations this week. I put my own budget out. It is my hope, Julian, that after these House of Delegate members, after they've been home for a little bit of time and they're out there meeting with some of their constituents, I have been disappointed is that when we did the sine die and ended the session, I called a special session 2 weeks later. I asked all of them to go home, do some town halls. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. I asked the conferees to continue to meet. That hasn't happened. So there is real gridlock today in our legislative process. I'm hoping with the introduction of my budget is a turning point with very common sense, and it is my goal in the next couple of weeks. In fact, the Merck Commission could take my budget, they could approve my two-year pilot program, and this would all be over, and we could get out of here very quickly.
Governor, that's a little bit of a dodge, because basically what I heard in Julian's question was, do you think you have the authority?
Here's what I'm saying. I've got a special session going on.
Oh, we understand that, sir. And it's I really hate to give you a hard time, but we really would love to hear your legal perspective on whether or not you think a governor of Virginia at some point in time, with the laws the way they are, could just take the Medicaid expansion money from the federal government and somehow move forward with it without any legislative action.
Listen, the legislature last year wrote the Merck Commission into the budget, as you know. The way to get this resolved is through the Merck, which was established through the legislative process. I want to work within the confines of that. I'm doing everything that I possibly can to get this done through the legislative process, and that's what I'm going to say for now on that topic.
Well, I've pressed you as hard as I can. I don't want to get you ticked off with it. So I'm going to go next to Charlottesville. We've got Kim on the line for you, sir. Kim, your question or comment for Governor Terry McAuliffe, please.
Hi. I am curious why there's only $9 million being spent on mental health. Isn't Virginia like number 47 in help for mental health patients?
Did you hear the question, Governor?
Yeah. Could you repeat it for me?
It seems like Kim got some information that told her there was only $9 million a year being spent on mental health in Virginia.
It's actually for 2 years with him.
Yeah. That's in addition. This is just on my introduced budget. But that's in addition to the about $45 million that has already been added into the budget for the issues around mental health. But I will go back to closing this coverage gap. If we are able to close it, there is about $200 million a year that we can use on behavioral and mental health issues that would be available to us by closing the coverage gap and bringing this money back. And I would also just say, I remind everybody, this is our money. We're bringing it back. It is $26 billion that Virginians will send to Washington tax dollars between now and 2022. We get about $6 billion of that back through the health exchange. We cannot let $20 billion of our money stay in Washington, which we could come back, create 30,000 new jobs, run through our economy, provide health care for up to 400,000, and save our budget. This is very important, Tom. It would net our budget based upon the actuarial analysis done by Pricewaterhouse, $1.1 billion. So for Kim's point, we've made some progress this year, albeit we got a long way to go on the issues of mental health, mental illness and the issues that we need to address. We've made some progress. We got a long way to go. We can really move this further down the line with this closing the coverage gap and bring about $200 million a year back into Virginia to do what we should do, and it's the right thing to do.
Kim, thanks so much for your call. Bob Roberts, professor of politics and a professor of public policy at James Madison University, is here with me in the Virginia Insight studio. Julian Walker, who covers state politics for the Virginian Pilot newspaper, based out of the state capitol, is with us by phone. And for just a couple more minutes, we do have the governor of Virginia with us, Terry McAuliffe. Next call coming in, also from Charlottesville. Greg, thanks for joining us. Your question or comment, please.
Hi, thanks, Tom. As always, you've got a great show going today. So as a physician who takes Medicaid, I've been talking to a lot of my patients as well as constituents of this area who are voting against Medicaid expansion. And what I've been impressed with is that they are all about financing, which I partially understand. So my question, Governor, is it possible to tie in Medicaid expansion with a revolutionary idea of drastically reducing the cost of medical care so that the Republicans vote for this, cost of medicine goes down, and we still get these 400,000 people covered?
Did you hear the question, Governor?
I think I heard enough of to understand on the issues of reforms and saving money through the expansion.
Yeah. So
is that the question?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Well, clearly, listen, we all of us, and one thing I've argued about from the beginning of this process is that we can use this money to totally reform our healthcare delivery system, make it more cost-effective, make it more efficient. I mean, there's no question, as I have visited all these clinics and hospitals. And let's be clear, if we do not close the coverage gap, hospitals are going to close. I was at Bon Secours in Portsmouth the other day. The lead doctor got up and said, Governor, if we don't bring this money back, this hospital will cease to exist. I talked to the CEO from Mountain State, from Wilmot. Hospitals are going to close. Rural communities are really going to pay a price. The gentleman from Charlottesville, UVA and VCU, are forfeiting $385 million in our teaching hospitals of money that we can bring back. So we're all for the reforms. In fact, in the budget, when they talk about decoupling the budget, in the budget is about $250 million of savings that have been brought about through the new ACA Act, through the reforms that both the House and the Senate have included in their budgets. So, yes, the answer is we can use this to reform, make it more cost effective. But I also, and then obviously having a healthy workforce, I remind you that 27 states in America have already decided to bring this money back to their respective states. Some of the most conservative governors in the country, Jan Brewer and Snyder from Michigan and Kasich from Ohio. Obviously, when you get more people in the system and you're delivering more effectively, the overall costs come down. That is why the Price Waterhouse report, which was ordered by the Merck Commission, not by me, said that between now and 2022, we will save the Virginia budget $1.1 billion. I mean, that alone, and I remind you that the woman Sandy was very good when she testified before the House Appropriations Committee. They were all, you know, giving her grief on her numbers, and she said, let me be clear. I have done the Commonwealth of Virginia's books for now 17 years. I haven't been wrong, and you haven't questioned before. These numbers are right. And what's happening is the people who are now signing up, where it used to be a hypothesis, we now know who's signing up in these 27 states. Guess what? They're healthier. 70% have at least one person in that household who is working. These are working folks who get their pants on every day and go out, get minimum wage or whatever, and they're entitled to be covered. And if we don't cover them, I just want everybody to understand on your show, Tom, that these 400,000 Virginians are still going to show up in an emergency room. Somebody will pay that cost, and it's our businesses are going to pay higher premiums, and that's why almost every chamber of commerce in Virginia, including the Virginia Chamber of Commerce, supports covering the coverage gap and getting everybody in and taking care of these folks.
Greg, thanks so much for your call. Elected last November and in office since this past January, the chief executive of the Commonwealth of Virginia, Governor Terry McAuliffe, thank you so very much for carving out a few minutes in a very busy schedule to spend some time with us today.
Well, thank you, Tom and Bob and Julian, of course, and I look forward to coming on with you again soon.
We'll hold you to that.
Thank you.
So on the phone line with us now, a member of the Virginia House of Delegates representing Charlottesville and part of Albemarle County, as well as the Democratic minority leader in the House of Delegates, David Toscano. Great to have you back on the Inside Airwaves.
It's great to be back with you all.
Hey, David, I just want to let you know we are not purposely front-loading the show with Democrats today. But for some reason, the Republicans were not available. You were on the line long enough to hear a little bit about what the governor was saying. You want to color in the picture anymore?
Well, I think the governor made a great case for doing this, and I think that with the introduction of his budget, he is making the contrast very stark and dramatic. The House Republican budget that was passed out the other night, it does not include the levels of spending for higher education, for K-12, for public safety, that the governor's budget does, because he's been able to attain $225 million in savings in his budget that is reappropriated for other purposes. And that was the theory upon which we said we should expand Medicaid, that we would generate a lot of savings in our budget. They would bring our Virginia tax dollars back to the state where it could be reinvested in hospitals and jobs. And we would free up money that could be spent on education, public safety, and the other things that make Virginia such a great state to be living in.
This is Bob Roberts. Why has it been so difficult to get the message out to voters and delegates, the problem of unreimbursed care and how hospitals deal with that? I mean, it's very complex, and it's difficult to discuss, but the vast majority of voters in Virginia really don't understand that, how unreimbursed care is dealt with by hospitals and doctors and other medical providers.
Well, I think you're right. It does take a lot of work. I mean, a lot of people don't know that there's a difference between the Medicare program, which is a federal program that operates for the benefit of people over 65, and the Medicaid program, which is a joint federal and state obligation. If you were to do a survey of folks on the street, a lot of them wouldn't be able to tell you the difference. So it is difficult to explain. But the long and short of it is people need to understand that we taxpayers in the Commonwealth pay over $140 million every year to places like the University of Virginia, VCU, and such, to take care of folks who are showing up at the emergency room who do not have any money to pay a bill. So those are our taxpayer dollars that are already being spent. Beyond that, a lot of these hospitals write off the costs of other poor people who can't afford to pay. That's called charity care. It's millions of dollars as well. And every time a hospital writes that bill off, somebody else pays. They pay in the form of higher insurance premiums or higher fees to make up the difference. And that is very, very difficult to try to explain to folks. The easiest thing, I think, is to explain to folks is we're sending money to Washington right now in our taxes to help pay for the Affordable Care Act. Without us taking the Medicaid expansion, we can't get that money back. So that's our hard-earned tax dollars that have gone to Washington and may end up being spent in Connecticut, California, Arizona, or other places that will accept the Medicaid expansion. I think they get that. I think it's easier to sell that proposition.
Julian Walker, I know that you also see Minority Leader Toscano on a fairly frequent basis at the state capitol, but I thought you might have a question for him, too.
Well, I think the question is how long he thinks that this will persist. He has been around, the minority leader has been around for many, many sessions, and he knows that there have been a number of budget standoffs before, most recently in 2012, which lasted more than a month and a half. In 2006, we had a budget standoff that went to the 11th hour. At the early part of the decade, in the years of former Governor Mark Warner, there was a budget standoff. So budget standoffs, for better or worse, are becoming more commonplace in Virginia. But what are the prospects for this one, given what we've seen at the beginning of this week, which is kind of start and stop action in the Senate, start and stop action in the House, which is now adjourned until the Speaker calls them back? How long will this standoff, this stalemate, persist?
That's a really good question. And in the first year I came down there was 2006, and the standoff went to June 28th, which was my birthday, because I remember voting for a budget on my birthday. I didn't quite understand the significance of that at the time, but, you know, it was a pretty severe standoff. I think the answer is it's going to depend a lot on how ideologically committed the House Republicans are to this notion that saying no is the only policy to embrace here. Because if they're already, if they're so opposed ideologically to this without recognizing the economic benefits of doing this, you know, then they could force a shutdown. Because what you've got is you've got a governor's budget, which has clearly embraced a number of savings and put those savings, reprogrammed them into the budget for K-12 universities, environmental protection, job creation, the things that Virginians consider important. In contrast, you got a House budget that doesn't program in those savings. So, and it doesn't do it because it's ideologically opposed to doing this expansion to deal with the coverage gap. And so if ideology trumps practical politics, you could be looking at a shutdown squarely between the eyes. But the governor has been very clear. You know, he's put out his budget. It's a clear contrast. And I think if the public looks at the contrast, they're going to say, well, you know, we're going to have more money for K-12. We're going to be able to cover a lot of people who are not covered now. We're going to be able to help our hospitals. Let's get this done.
David Toscano, minority leader for the Democrats in the House of Delegates, as well as a delegate himself representing Charlottesville and parts of Albemarle County, is with us for only a few more minutes here on this edition of Virginia Insight. So if you have a question or comment specific for him, we'd love to hear from you right now at 888-WMRA-TALK in all numbers. That's 888-967-2825. Also with us, Bob Roberts from the Politics Department at James Madison University and political reporter Julian Walker from the Virginian Pilot newspaper, who, by the way, is a JMU alum. You're allowed to talk to them, too. David, I'm not sure exactly how to put this, but you're familiar enough with me that you can probably figure out what I'm trying to ask you. So let me try. It seems to me that Republicans in Washington got themselves in a lot of trouble over a couple of year period, culminating with last fall, where they shut down the government because they weren't getting what they wanted in how the federal budget was being dealt with. Now we have a situation where Democrats in Virginia are saying the only way we're going to go forward with a state budget is if you do what we want to do on Medicaid expansion. Is it possible that Democrats in Virginia could end up getting themselves in the same kind of trouble that Republicans in Washington got in terms of being blamed for a potential government shutdown?
Well, I think that's the attempt that the Republicans are making to frame the issue in that way. But I don't see it that way at all. You know, I see that now we have pretty clearly a budget that this governor has put out that will address the problems of getting a constitutionally required balanced budget in place by the end of the fiscal year, and that generates a lot of savings that get reprogrammed into education and the like. And the Republicans are going to have to – they've already voted that budget down again once. I think they're going to have to vote it down a whole bunch of times. And I think when it's going to come down to the 11th hour, they're going to see something from the Senate that looks the same way. They're going to vote down again and again and again a budget that solves this problem and allows government to proceed on July 1 with a new budget. And the risk they've got is they're going to be accused of trying to do in Virginia what they tried to do in Washington, and that was to defy the executive to and essentially say, we're going to shut down the government over an ideological position that doesn't make good business sense. And I think that, you know, that's the risk they have. And, of course, they're going to try to frame it as Governor McAuliffe's problem. But I think they're going to have a problem doing that because Governor McAuliffe will keep sending down budgets that have these savings in there, that have this spending for the things that people consider important in Virginia, and they're going to continue to say no. And the public doesn't like people just saying no. If you don't like what's being proposed, propose an alternative. We don't have such an alternative.
Julian, I've got a whole bunch more questions for David Toscano, but I wanted to be polite and see if you had one before I proceed.
I'll let you to it.
David, let's switch focus then for a couple of minutes and talk a little bit about mental health. What's the latest on improvements in Virginia on that issue?
Well, the good news is, you know, in a bipartisan way, we went ahead and made some changes in the procedures for being able to detain people who are in crisis and get them in bed sooner rather than later. That found the form of a number of legislative new bills that were put into place, including a bill that will require a bed registry to be online so we can find a bed quicker, and if we can't find a bed right away, to have the state hospitals be the hospitals of last resort so that people will get the help that they need. We also put money in the budget, $5 million more in the budget, to help service the need for those additional beds. So we're doing not just changes in the statutory provisions, but we're also putting money in the budget to accomplish those changes. You know, that doesn't solve all the problems. We got huge problems with adolescent issues that that we're not really addressing and trying to get people served in community settings. But it does address the problem that arose out of the Cree Deeds and Gus Deeds situation last fall. And, you know, we take it one step at a time. We made some changes after Virginia Tech. Now we've made these changes, and we'll have to keep monitoring to see what additional changes need to be made.
Another topic that touches on national as well as international politics is, you know, President Obama met with the Pope at Vatican City today, and we're given to understand that one of the things they talked about is the problem across the globe, as well as in the U.S., of income inequality. To what degree do you see that as being a problem in Virginia?
Well, I think it's, you know, Virginia is not much different than the rest of the country. I mean, it is true that Virginia tends to have a stronger economy than a number of states, particularly in the South. You know, the situation in this country is that, you know, we lost a lot of high-paying manufacturing jobs over the last 20 to 30 years, and we haven't been able to replace them. Our competitive advantage is in our knowledge and our entrepreneurship. But so far, that hasn't turned into a lot of higher-paying jobs that allow people who perhaps didn't have that much growing up as a youngster to advance on the social mobility scale and the economic mobility scale. And that's the biggest problem. I think the United States has always prided itself on this notion that you could start at the bottom, and if you worked hard and played by the rules, you could get ahead. And a lot of that is going by the wayside now. So it's a, you know, it's a huge problem, and it's not going to be solved overnight. It is going to require some social policy, you know, the economy is changing, and a lot of these jobs that pay really good wages are moving different places.
David, we're just about to hit the break, but let me ask you this before you go. Do you see the debate over Medicaid expansion in Virginia as being at all connected to a debate over income inequality?
Only marginally. It would be better if people had higher incomes, and then we wouldn't have to worry about folks who didn't have insurance, could afford to pay for it. But it's only marginally. We have 400,000 people right now who are left out of insurance. Well, actually, the number is higher, but we can fix that with expanding Medicaid in this budget.
David Toscano, delegate from Charlottesville, thank you so much.
Thank you.
888 WMRA Talk. the easy way to remember our phone number. In all numbers, that's 888-967-2825. We're also happy to take comments and questions on our Facebook page, where we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. Here with me on this edition of Virginia Insight, state government reporter for the Virginian Pilot newspaper, Julian Walker, plus from the James Madison University Politics and Public Administration Department's Bob Roberts. My name, by the way, is Tom Graham. Hey, Julian, we heard from a Democratic governor. We heard from the Democratic leader in the House of Delegates. Anything in particular strike you about what you heard?
I think it was pretty standard. It's what we've come to hear. I think what was, to me, what was most interesting was the question that that you asked about Delegate Toscano about the Medicaid standoff and whether or not there was a danger of Democrats being accused of and being kind of tarnished with the same label that congressional Republicans were last year during the federal budget government shutdown. And I think that there is a risk for Democrats here in Virginia over that. And the reason is this, that while there is some comparison between the two situations, in so much as they both were related to the Affordable Care Act, or what is colloquially known as Obamacare, the difference is that on the federal level, Obamacare had been challenged numerous times, dozens and dozens of times, both in the courts and legislatively, and had sustained or survived all of those challenges. And so Republicans took the brunt of the blame for that government shutdown because people perceived it as a result of beating a dead horse. Here in Virginia, we're on a different footing because this is a state-based policy debate, not a federal policy debate. And what you have is Republicans who are in some respects isolated from their traditional allies, the Chambers of Commerce, the Hospital and Healthcare Association, a lot of special interest groups that normally would trend more conservative in their leanings or in their advocacy for policy. And they're aligned with Democrats or the pro-Medicaid forces in this particular debate. However, what augurs against that is that you've got more and more local governments who are in the midst of setting their own budgets for the next fiscal year, who rely on pass-through state aid, state funding to localities, who are getting nervous, getting anxious about the fact that they don't have certainty from the state about how much money they're going to get to support their local schools, their local police and sheriff, so on and so forth, social services, and various core government programs on down the line. And so what you've got is even localities who support Medicaid expansion concept are saying, we also need you to get a budget done. And if that means putting the Medicaid issue aside and getting a budget passed, then so be it, even though we are with you conceptually, philosophically on Medicaid. And the challenge of that is, how long do Democrats hold out trying to get Medicaid through? Because they know that if they do not link it to a budget deal, there is no way they are going, at least in the near term, they're going to get Republicans to go along with them on Medicaid, even if they call a separate special session on Medicaid. And so Democrats do run the risk of revolt and of getting blamed for this because you've got localities in particular clamoring for budget certainty.
Bob Roberts, you have a big smile on your face at the moment, and it was reminiscent of when I was pressing the governor following up Julian's question about whether he might have the authority as governor to proceed on Medicaid expansion without legislative interaction.
He doesn't. But back in the Great Depression, you have to remember that the Democrat, the Burgess.
So that's a very simple answer he does not.
No,
he does not have
does
that
not, but that doesn't end the issue. Because back in the Great Depression, the Byrd Democrats controlled the legislature. And they refused to allocate money for New Deal programs in the state of Virginia. They adamantly refused. They didn't want to participate in the New Deal. The federal government went ahead and ran those programs in the state of Virginia without the approval of the state legislature. They ran them. Localities contributed money to them throughout the state, and they were put in place. So in theory, the governor can't do this, but there's a possibility legally that if the Obama administration wanted to attempt to do this, I'm not sure they would do it, they could, let's say, set up private insurance companies and say, here's the money, you go out and get those 400,000 people, and we'll pay you. I mean, that is a possibility. I'm not saying they would do that. I'm just saying there is precedent for doing that. Clearly, I don't believe the governor has the authority to do it himself.
For a guy with a doctorate in political science, as well as a doctorate in law, you always come up with the most interesting possibilities. Let's go down to our Facebook page. We've got this from Joni, who says, quote, I was polled by the right-wing Americans for Prosperity on the Medicaid subject. Their position was that it was bad because able-bodied people would be covered. Did not seem to matter to them that Virginia covers a low percentage of the poor anyway. Have you heard this argument? And what would be the income threshold for expanded Medicaid coverage? Julian, do you have answers to Joni's questions?
I can answer that question. There are a couple things. One, Medicaid spending in Virginia is generally considered to have a miserly Medicaid program. Per capita spending for Virginia on Medicaid patients is 46th out of 50 states.
Right.
So it is a pretty, comparatively speaking, a pretty miserly or kind of a skin-flinty program, if you will. Virginia, essentially people who are now eligible for Medicaid are people who are what are categorized as aged, blind, disabled, children, and pregnant women. Those are the classifications of people who now qualify for Medicaid if they meet income eligibility. Under the Medicaid expansion framework, if you will, people who are up to 133% of the federal poverty level with a 5% enhancement kicker, so essentially 138% of the federal poverty level, would be eligible, income eligible, for Medicaid expansion. That is largely targeting, quote unquote, able-bodied or working adults who happen to be low-income people. At the 133% poverty rate, I believe the annual income threshold is about $15,000, but I will double-check that fact.
That's for an individual. For a family of four, it's closer to
$30,000. Right. I believe it's like $32,000 at a family of four. I believe it's about $15,000 for an individual, and that's annual income.
Bob Roberts is nodding his head.
So you're talking largely about people who right now are ineligible, who are about 70% of them would be working adults who just don't earn enough, who fall into what Democrats are calling the coverage gap, which are people who are above, who are either ineligible because of characteristics or income qualifications, are ineligible for Medicaid in Virginia now, which, as we said, Virginia's spending on Medicaid per capita spending is 46 among 50 states. And who yet fall below the threshold to get government subsidies to qualify for purchasing insurance through a health benefit exchange marketplace, which is also set up under the Affordable Care Act. And so the people that are caught in between, there are about 1 million people in Virginia who are uninsured, and there are roughly 400,000, this is a Kaiser estimate, of that 1 million uninsured population who would be eligible under an expanded population, under an expansion system. And the estimate is that the uptake rate on those people would be about 69-70%. So you're looking at, again, projections, maybe 250,000 of the 400,000 or so who would be eligible under an expanded Medicaid system would actually sign up for the program and enroll in the program, however it takes shape in Virginia, if it were approved in Virginia. A whole lot of ifs there.
Julian Walker covers state politics for the Virginian Pilot newspaper. Bob Roberts is a professor of politics and a professor of public policy at James Madison University. My name, Tom Graham. Anything political, although we've been focusing mostly on this controversy related to whether or not we're going to get a new state budget, anything political we'd be happy to discuss with you if you give us a call at 888-WMRA. Talk in all numbers. That's 888-967-2825. Fair warning, however, we've only got a couple more minutes to fit in any new calls. We have not, as far as I can tell, heard from any Republicans yet today. As I mentioned at the top of the hour, there were some lawmakers who are Republicans who were invited, but they were unable to make it. If you there listening are Republican and you'd like to share your perspective, we definitely would like to hear from you. But as long as we haven't heard any so far this hour, I got to mention Sarah Palin. because she weighed in to the raging debate of national politics over the past couple of weeks. This comment from her on Fox News, quote, she was talking about Russia and other things. Quote, people are looking at Putin as one who wrestles bears and drills for oil. They look at our president as one who wears mom jeans and equivocates and bloviates. I just was a little startled that former Governor Palin thought that President Obama was guilty of wearing mom jeans. I realize it's been a raging controversy lately, but...
Yeah, it's a little bit silly, and it's a little bit sexist that somehow you're saying he's not macho enough to stand up to Putin, simplifying the controversy over the Ukraine, which is an exceptionally difficult issue, and you trivialize it. And it's silly. I mean, it's in a sense that as if she wants Obama to challenge Putin to a brawl. Yeah, let's fight it out like men would do in something like this.
Well, but the president was on a couple of television and I guess internet video shows earlier this month where the subject of his style of jeans did come up. And I think he said something to the effect of, you know, once when I had to throw out a ball at a baseball game, I did wear some loose jeans and I've been paying for it ever since.
And it's just silly. I mean, it's just silly. You try to trivialize, makes issues simple when they're very complex. And this is just part of the Republican attempt to define Obama as weak. That's what it simply is.
Well, then let's go back to at least some semi-serious stuff. I think we've got a call coming in from Scottsville. D, thank you for joining us. Your question or comment, please.
Yes, I'm wondering whether your guest might have a comment on what I see as a big problem for Republicans, that they might be digging a hole for themselves, but constantly opposing anything that would help the working man who is trying just to get by all the time, instead of the federal level they just want tax cuts for more billionaires, and they're getting most of their votes from a working class lower educated voter.
D, hold on for me for just a second. Julian Walker, in covering lots of different Republicans who work at the state capitol, my sense is they don't see themselves that way. How do they see themselves?
I don't think they do see themselves that way. But I think the bigger issue here beyond philosophy is gerrymandering, is the way that districts are drawn in this state, both congressional districts and on the General Assembly legislative level. And whether or not the caller's supposition is accurate is somewhat immaterial, because on both sides, partisans on both sides, Democrats and Republicans, traditionally have and will continue to draw themselves safe districts that are misshapen, that cut across various localities, various precincts, split them in half or into thirds or other fractional sizes in order to kind of sequester or cloister voters that are sympathetic to them. So people are just like many of us who are self-selective in who we hang out with, the news sources that we listen to, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Legislators are, on the state and federal level, are similarly selective in picking their own constituents, their own pool of voters, to help keep them in office and preserve their safe seats.
Yeah, I understand that, but hasn't there been a state or two that has gone to a nonpartisan board?
Oh, Bob Roberts, your favorite state in the union, only because you grew up there.
I grew up there. Iowa has had that for a number of decades, where Iowa has had a nonpartisan, and we've had bills in the legislature every year to establish a similar system. But as Julian indicates, the party, the Republican Party now, is deeply opposed to it. But your issue is a broader issue. If you really look at a lot of, let's say, Republican voters, and they are, not all Republican voters are wealthy. In fact, a lot of Republican Party voters are not. they are voting against self-interest. They do vote against self-interest, but they're driven by ideology. In other words, they deeply believe, many Republican voters, and I think this Medicaid debate is often over this, is that individuals who are adults, who can work, should be able to take care of themselves. And it's not society's responsibility to take care of themselves. And if they're poor, if they don't earn enough, it's their problem. That's their belief.
Well, may I just quote Mark Twain in conclusion, who said that even with all the armies of the world, those powers are powerless against an idea whose time has come. And the public, in my opinion...
We're out of time. I've got one last question I need to check quickly with Julian. And we've only got about 20 seconds left for it, Julian. Is there any news about developments in mental health in Virginia?
Yes, and I'm glad we were able to get to this. Just this afternoon, the much anticipated and delayed State Inspector General report into the situation involving State Senator Creed Deeds and his son, the tragic situation which led to the senator being stabbed and his son taking his own life, has come out this afternoon. And essentially, it reaffirms a lot of what we already know, and it reinforces the recommendations that were embodied in some of the mental health policy reform during this past General Assembly session this winter.
And for more detail, we're going to have to see your article in the Virginian Pilot tomorrow. Our guests have been earlier in the hour, Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe, plus the minority leader for the Virginia House of Delegates, David Toscano. Still with us as we close out, Professor of Political Science from James Madison University, Bob Roberts, and Virginian Pilot newspaper reporter, as well as JMU alum, Julian Walker. Gentlemen, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Virginia Insights executive producer Matt Bingay, associate producers Dan Easley, Terry Ward, and Bob Levicky. Some of our break music supplied by Robert Jaspe and Inner Rhythm. Thanks for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more insight.